neighbors, and welcome to the Blind Handyman Show. We're recording right now at the Little Ranch House Studio on Southwood Drive in Lufkin, Texas. This happens to be show number 134, and it's, September 20th, 2005.
Yeah.
Good to have you along with us today. For the next hour, we'll talk about building, repairing, and maintaining, all designed with a blinded mind. Our host, ladies and gentlemen, Don Patterson.
Yes, sir. kind of on birthday patrol today.
Even number show, so Patterson is here.
Today is the warden's birthday. I'm not going to say
warden.
How old she is, but anyway, we're celebrating tonight at El Chico's.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. Don Shaw, hi.
Hey, Tom, what's going on?
Oh, man, it's good to have you with us today. Also, I'm Tom Houston, by the way. But here he is. This is the creator and producer of Blind Handyman. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Phil Parr.
So you really really swung out. You're taking it to El Chico's. Huh?
Actually, I think she's paying.
Mexico. Donald, what is wrong with your mic? You're not close.
I don't know, man. I don't know what the deal is.
Today. You're further from it than usual, for one thing.
No, it's right on.
Is he?
I don't know what
has his windscreen moved back or something?
No.
No.
It's right on.
I don't wonder what the deal is.
I don't know.
There's nothing plugged in there, is there?
I cranked that, no, sir.
Wait a minute. Hang on. Shaw?
Hello, test. Hello.
I figured found a problem.
Had a plug up there.
I had a little plug up there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you can pull him down some now. That's what you had.
Say something, Shaw.
Hello, test.
There
Mr.
we go.
Mr. Tom.
That's fine right there.
Work.
Yeah, I figured that out. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
I thought it was us trying to blame him.
That's why you're the creator and producer.
That's why they keep me around.
Figure out this board.
So you're taking it to El Chico's for a big anniversary, Patterson.
Birthday.
61, huh? Oh,
and I didn't say that.
Yeah.
And I got her favorite perfume for her birthday, so
yeah,
everything's cool.
I know. Well, birthdays, you know, you get 61. They don't mean a whole lot anymore, I suppose, do they?
No, we kind of enjoy. You know, ours are close together, 5 days apart, so we kind of celebrate both of them at the same time.
That would be the thing to do.
What'd you get for your birthday?
Let's see, Twinsers, my favorite two guys, got me a Houston Astros red baseball cap. I have the black one, but now I've got the red one. In fact, I'm wearing it now.
Exactly, I see.
And
nice.
Let's see, and Emily got me some T-shirts or something, I think.
Yeah, I think I've already gotten my birthday present. I don't remember what it was, but seemed like
cruise, probably.
Well, you probably the cruise.
It was probably it.
Seemed like last summer I said, I'll just consider this my birthday present. Lou Ann said, oh, you don't need to do that, but I'm sure I will.
When is the cruise?
The cruise is the 13th of October. We're leaving on the 13th of October.
Out of?
Galveston. You want to go?
Galveston. No, I don't think so. We'll probably be in there. Who knows?
Who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men? Well, we checked the thermometer a while ago. We have the thermometer here, the talking thermometer in the studio. It was 101 degrees outside on the porch of the studio building. 101 on the 20th of September.
That's all of this taking place in anticipation of Hurricane Rita.
We'll
probably get, if we're on the dirty side of that storm, we'll get some rain out of it at least.
Oh, yeah.
They're saying 101 tomorrow also.
Yeah.
It's going to be 101 tomorrow. Now, let's see. Pat, they turn clockwise or counterclockwise? Do we ever decide that?
Well, they turn counterclockwise.
Oh, well, I think
clockwise. I think it is,
actually.
Too.
Boy, that opened a can of worms.
Boy, it did.
Oh, you're sorry. You remember the blind weekend? Remember the blind weekend?
Yeah, we did kind of dwell on that a while.
Ceiling fans. Old John Bennett was down here, and I had these two ceiling fans, and we were trying to decide if they turned clockwise or counterclockwise. And I don't know.
It's all in the eye of the beholder.
That's it. You got it.
Are they?
Of course, Connelly, Stuckey's in one. And, oh, man. I don't know. Anyway, it's quite. I'll tell this story at the end of the show. I had a little quick air conditioner story that's just freaked me out yesterday, but I'll save it. I know you're all sitting on the edges of your chairs.
I just scooted forward, not set.
Yeah.
I believe they do go counterclockwise, then that's why on the east side of the hurricane is where the rain is sucking it out of the water, and then
in other words, the Mississippi side was the bad side of that hurricane.
Yes. Yes.
New Orleans. That would mean that they go counterclockwise.
Right. New Orleans would not have had, you know, the Mucho problem except for the levees. I mean, that was, you know, that was what killed them.
Well, you know, if you build a city 20 feet below sea level and you there's just no way that you're going to.
Yeah, it looks like somebody would have figured that out.
Well, I think yeah. they had, I seemed like I read a book one time about the vulnerability of New Orleans. And
yeah.
You know, everybody figured it out, but that feller at Washington. What's his name? The FEMA director, what's his name? I can't remember.
I don't know.
Brown.
The ex
FEMA.
Did they fire him?
He resigned, I think.
Oh, yeah,
I think so.
Yeah. I didn't realize that.
Has that ever happened in New Orleans before? I guess it has.
Yeah, back in the 20s, I think, didn't it, Pat?
I'm not sure, but I would imagine it's happened.
So if it happens every 85 years,
yeah,
maybe they're no worse off than we are with tornadoes and stuff.
Well, we don't have tornadoes. When's the last time we had a tornado?
It's been a while over at Lake Rayburn. Remember back a few years ago?
Yeah,
and we had a pretty bad storm come through here just a few weeks ago.
Well, we did. The one that took my tree down?
Put a tree on your house.
That one was
put
bad.
Damn tree
now,
in my
somehow
house.
That storm must have missed my house.
No. I mean, where were you that day? You weren't here that day, but that's the day the big tree fell on the house, remember?
I came by the day or so later,
because
y'all were there, but that's been, what, like a month ago?
It's been a month.
About a month.
Yeah. Well, that was somewhere around, that's actually been a month and a half ago, so that was around the 1st of August.
But, I mean, even here, talk about erratic weather, I mean, Emily's called me on the cell phone or either one of her kids and said, you know, it's raining and hailing here on the loop and all that, and I'm out there at Bear Claw and the sun's shining and nothing.
Right. Well, it's got to end somewhere.
Yeah,
it's kind of got to be someplace where it just stops.
That's true.
All right, Tommy.
Okay. Yes, sir. We have a little list mail here. Huh? Here's one from Bryce. He says, on Saturday, I had a pool company come and erect our 16-by-24-foot pool. Had it filled by mid-morning on Sunday. Next weekend, we're going to spread 2 yards of a mixture of sand and asphalt on one side of the pool where a deck's going to be.
Uh-huh.
Okay, we'll level the sand mixture, pack it down, and use cement foundation blocks for the uprights, and then frame it. I'm using treated wood for the uprights and framing. For the actual decking, I'll be using 2x6 redwood. Question, what is the best material to apply to seal the redwood? Also, do they make a redwood stain that also has a good sealer mixed in?
I don't think you have to seal redwood, do you?
I don't think you do. I think you can stain it, but I don't think you have to seal it.
I think redwood is in and of itself the best thing. That's going to be expensive.
It's going to spend some dollars on that deck.
Yeah, especially, you know, they've got a lot of this. I mean, that just maybe he has access to the redwood or chooses it. But, you know, they make these synthetic deck materials now. Of course, they're expensive, too, but... Home Depot sells one, and I can't think of the name of it, but they're all painted. I mean, you don't have to do anything. Just put it all down.
Right. Yeah, I've seen those.
Seemed like I saw one, and you can feel it, and you can't really tell it's not wood.
But if you felt compelled to seal it, I don't think you should. But Thompson's waterproofing is clear, and so I don't think it'll discolor it, especially if you're going to redwood stain it anyway. So if you just felt compelled to do that, you can buy 5 gallons of it and put it in a pump-up sprayer. It's fairly cheap.
Or just put it in a bucket and pour it out and slop it around because you can't get too much.
Yeah, I don't think it would hurt you. I don't know that it'll help you.
I don't think redwood requires any...
I don't either. I think you just let it natural.
I've got a response to that from our friend Dale up in Ontario, Canada.
Oh, my God, he knows everything. Go ahead.
Uh-huh.
As I understand it, among the beauties of redwood is that it doesn't really need staining. Once you begin down that road, you're pretty well stuck to it for the life of the deck. Real redwood stands up very well out of doors, and that is why it's preferred for that application. There are any number of water sealers available, clear ones. Thompson is one of which comes to mind, which I often see advertised. You might like to protect the boards on all sides before you fix them down, then apply another surface coat to the exposed surfaces. And
so
that was Dale's take on it.
He's going to build a frame out of some kind of treated creosote lumber, or not creosote, but treated lumber, and then build the deck out of redwood itself is the way I see it, right?
Yeah, his posts, I think he said.
We're going to be treated posts.
Or treated lumber. There again, and I agree with Dale on one thing, because even just on my siding and stuff that I did in the garage, I painted and primed all sides. just one time, and then the service. But that's the way I do it. I just get it erected, and then just get you some Thompson's. And I'm not sure that I would compromise the redwood by staining it either. I think it's natural weathering.
I'd Google search redwood and figure out. Yeah. You buy redwood chairs and redwood. I've had redwood chairs that lasted 10, 12 years and never did a damn thing to them.
Right.
Yeah, just sitting out on the deck.
Anybody know where Bryce lives?
No.
I think in California, but I'm not.
Have we not had him as a...
We have. It's been a while.
I don't remember.
Yeah.
We need to get him back to talk about this project when they finish it, though.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Okay, here's one. A guy that was wondering how to put an on-off switch on a light cord. He says, I have a cabinet that has a light in it, but the only way that I can turn the light on is to plug it up and unplug it. I don't really like this. Please explain it where I can understand it. Thanks, Steve Stewart.
Well, who wants to take that, Don?
Pete gave a great response, which I don't know if you have it, Tom.
No,
but boy,
no,
it sounds as good as any. And he said you can buy a two-piece setup at your local hardware store, and you put the wires down into the bottom half of this and put the top over it. I think it cuts the wire for you.
Yeah.
And clamps down over the wire, and that's all you do. Just screw it together, put the wire in the track, screw it together, and bingo, you're good to go.
And you got a switch then on the plug itself, or
you got a switch on the wire between the plug and the light.
Okay, so you just slip this thing over the wire and then tighten it down, and bingo, you got a switch.
I mean, it's the switch. That's what
you
buy.
It is the switch that you buy. It's the inline switch. That's right.
Hmm.
And that was a good...
But that's going to hang somewhere. I mean,
it's got to
hang down somewhere.
You don't have to even cut the wire?
That's what the post said.
That's amazing.
I think it's got some prongs or something when you screw it down together or something that, I guess, stick through the insulation of the wire. And you just separate the wire into these tracks, into two tracks, the post said.
And run it and put the top on
and
screw it down, and bingo.
I guess something sticks into the middle of the wire and
breaks it right
and
there.
And breaks the
circuit. But, you know, these Scotch locks that I use to join audio cable together, you don't strip the wire there. You just put the wire up in there, and then you have a little tool. You just clamp down on the Scotch lock, and bingo, it pierces the wire itself.
Probably the same kind of deal. Maybe this thing's got a built-in something that...
If you're an audio folks and nut like me and you don't have Scotch locks, order yourself a body. Make three different sizes, big, medium, and small Scotch locks. You just stick the wires up in and clamp down on them with a pair of pliers or a Scotch locks tool, and that wires together, and it's there.
They're the thing to have, aren't they?
You bet.
I guess I'm still living in the past, at least. I twist mine. I take the insulation off and use the Scotch lock and twist them on.
No.
Works great.
Yeah.
That's what I did in installing that oven.
Using that electric tape.
No electric tape. If you just take a very little insulation off and then just put the two wires side by side. Don't twist them. And then use the Scotch lock to twist the wire.
Yeah, but you don't have to strip the wire.
I didn't know that.
No, you don't have to strip the wire. It'll puncture it for you. All right, go ahead, Tommy.
Okay, electronically speaking, why can't one plug any old self-respecting microphone into the mic jack on a sound card and have it work? I always use a mixer going to the line in, but it seems that some applications actually require use of the mic jack. If possible, I'd rather not give in to those who thought it clever to design sound cards so that they could only use those mics designed for the purpose. This comes from Jay.
No, any mic will work if it's got the right plug on it. I don't know any mic. I don't know why, the only difference in the line in and the microphone in on the sound card is the microphone in has a little chip, has a preamp chip that boosts that audio a little bit more than the line. You figure the line is coming out hot enough. It doesn't need boosting, but the mic is just a mic. You just vibrate in a piece of tin some way or another. I mean, that's all a microphone is you're just vibrating something against a magnet, and of course it doesn't have enough gain, so they put you a little mic preamp in that sound card to boost your mic. But sure, you can plug any mic you want to in. I mean, there might be some exceptions, some little cheap Radio Shack mic that wouldn't work, but most of those are hot as hell. I mean, most of those have got plenty of gain.
So then Pete didn't say everything will match up and you can just plug one in. And
These days, yeah, they're all,
hope for the
they're
best.
All, what, 500 ohms? What are they?
I don't know. But I've heard you can take a speaker even and plug into a mic input and you can, that'll even make a rudimentary.
You can, but it'll be a real bassy microphone.
Oh, I'm sure it would be.
I used to do that at the blind school before we had a microphone.
Yeah.
It'll be real bass. I tell you what I did one time. I took a small speaker and screwed it physically with screws to the frame or the wood of my upright bass and tied it to a microphone input and made me a bass pickup like that. And it worked.
Boy, I bet it did. Oh, I bet it did work.
It worked like a top.
It'd be bassy to start with.
It'd be bassy to start with. It amplified that upright bass. All right, we have an interesting guest situation today. We're going to attempt to make contact with Ray Boyce in Australia. And so far, I haven't been able to get him to answer the phone, but if he'll answer the phone, we're going to call him. If not, we have a pre-recorded interview with Don Shaw talking to Ray about mining, right? Isn't that right?
Yeah, Don? Yeah, coal mining.
So
either way,
Ray Boyce is fixing to be our guest on the Blind Handyman Show, and we'll be back in just a minute. Hope you'll stay with us.
Made a lot of new friends on the Blind Like Me list that I'll never forget.
Well, them crazy people on that Blind Like Me list just talk about the silliest thing.
To join the Blind Like Me list, send a blank email to blindlikeme-subscribe@yahoogroups.com. That's blindlikeme-subscribe@yahoogroups.com.
Okay, I love being on the Blind Like Me list because I'm the moderator and I get to delete people if I want to.
If you enjoy chatting with other blind folks, come join us on the Blind Like Me list. Send a blank email to blindlikeme-subscribe@yahoogroups.com. About the Blind Handyman List, sir?
The thing I like the best about the Blind Handyman List, great place to exchange information and gather ideas on anything to do with being a handyman around the house.
I found out how to fix my garbage disposal on the Handyman List. And it works.
If you'd like to join the Blind Handyman list, send a blank email to blindhandyman-subscribe@yahoogroups.com. That's blindhandyman-subscribe@yahoogroups.com.
The thing I like about the Blind Handyman list, I'm the moderator, and I can delete you if I want to. So don't get out of line. Stay on topic.
That's blindhandyman-subscribe@yahoogroups.com.
This is the Blind Handyman. Be sure and tell a friend about the program and email us often, blindhandyman@hotmail.com. Now, here is more of the show with Don Shaw.
I'm back, and today I'm going to be talking with list member Ray Boyce, and he's going to be telling us about his coal mining experiences.
Yeah, well, the expertise is in the mining industry where, after I come out of my apprenticeship, I was in that mine out there, and as I said to you, it was 750 feet straight down, so my grandfather worked there before me, and my father worked there actually when I started. My grandfather actually retired when I started there. And the mine went for miles and miles, because it had been operated for about 80 years, I suppose. There was just underground, there was brisk roads everywhere. A lot of people don't realise that when you go down there, you've got to breathe oxygen, and so there's oxygen which goes in one way, and that's directed right to the face where you're working, and they've got returns where the gases and the stale air is sucked out of the mine through an air shaft. You know, you might, when you go down there 750 feet, you might then go about 8 or 10 miles in under the land to where they're over there extracting coal. So you've got to have oxygen to breathe there. And so there's air going in all the time down there. And as soon as that fan or something goes wrong, then people have got to get out of there because they just wouldn't be able to breathe. It's the same, I guess, as underwater. You've got to have oxygen to breathe, and it's the same sort of principle. So, you know, you're miles away from when you go down there from where you entered the mine, and there's a cage which takes you down, and there's a cage that goes up. So as one's going down, the other one's coming up, sort of a counterbalance-like mechanism. And I worked there for 11 years, and then when it closed because of economical situations, they couldn't sell the coal, they had no markets at the time, and they closed the mine, although there was a tremendous amount of coal there. I went from there up to Aberdeen East Washery, which is about 10 k's away from where I was, and I was a fitter in a coal washing plant up there, so we had to operate the plant. If something went wrong, we had to shut it down, repair it, start it back up again. And it was a Saturday. We had to work either 6 or 8 hours because that was the maintenance day. And if there was something big on, you had to work Sundays. And that was either 6 or 8 hours Sunday. So it's a virtually full-time thing. So my expertise there is maintenance in overhauling a lot of mining equipment, pumps, running conveyor systems on, and all that sort of stuff. Anything to do with mining, I've done a tremendous amount of work in that area.
Well, it sounds like you have done a lot of it over the years. Well, I tell you, you sure wouldn't want to have claustrophobia or anything like that working down in those tunnels, it sounds like. And it sounds like it'd be kind of scary as far as the oxygen supply goes. Would be, like you said, if something goes wrong, man, you'd want to be getting out of there. And I'm sure there's alarms and all kinds of things that tell you when there's a problem. But, you know, it seems to me like, I guess that's just something after you do it for a while that you, but it seems like at first, man, it seems like you'd be thinking all the time, I wonder if something's going to go wrong here. I wonder if I'm going to need to get out.
Yeah, the interesting thing is, Don, you got a safety helmet on, and you got a light on your helmet, and a battery pack on your back, but you've also got a canister on your belt in case there's a fire there, and you've got to tear the top off this canister, put a peg on your nose, and put this thing in your mouth, and you breathe through chemicals. So that might give you the escape time to get out away from a fire. But I was never ever worried under there, because the roof varied, I guess, in height from way over your head to head height. It all depends where or how thick the seam of coal was, where you went. Of course, there was rubble all over the ground, so it was constantly tripping over stuff like rubble and coal and stone all over the ground. It wasn't just like walking on a piece of concrete. It was just rough going. And those roof heights varied a lot. In one particular seam, it was called the Hamsel seam, the seam of coal was very narrow, so the height there, I was working on my knees I had brought some really low Lenorse miners in, and these miners were very low, and the shuttle cars that they entered the coal in were very low, but they worked that seam out. It was very rich, that's why they went in there. It was a very low ash content and very high quality coal. But they worked that out and they got back out of there. The conditions weren't really good because you were so low down, you know. So certainly in situations like that, you wouldn't want to feel any sort of claustrophobia or anything like that. When I first started in the mines in the early 60s, I had, when I was extracting coal, I used to drive 4 headings into the coal, like 4 streets into the coal with blocks of coal between about 20 feet wide. And they were the roof supports, and they had, they never had continuous miners then. They had a big thing like a swordfish, like a big long blade with a chain running around the outside and these tungsten carbide bits. And they used to cut right around the outside of the seam, bore holes in it and blow that face out. And then they used to bring a loader in, which had arms on like a crab. And they used to just shuffle that into the coal, and it would gather it up and feed it through a sort of an endless chain through the guts of this machine and tip it into a shuttle car, which was just like a big empty truck. And it would hold about 20 tonne, and it would run it out and tip it into skips, or if they had conveyor systems running in there, it would tip it on the conveyor systems. They then got away from that because it was sort of slow, and they brought those continuous miners in, which were a series of chains across the front of the miner with these tungsten carbide bits in, and big pineapples on either side with the pick sticking out at all different angles, and they just sump that with hydraulic ram straight into the face of the coal, and it would chew it out, and it would drop down underneath the machine, and these arms would gather it up, an endless chain situation again, through the guts of the machine and tip it into shuttle cars, and then would go out like that. And then they had roof bolts on the side of the machine. They bore holes up through the layers of mudstone and stratus above. And they would put like a thing in, like a, you know, when you bore holes in concrete and you want to lock something down, like a loxon type situation. Well, it was the same thing, but it was about 8 or 10 feet long. So they'd bore holes up into the stratus of the coal and mudstone and everything. And then bind that together by locking those layers together so they didn't drop on your head. In the bad roof areas, they'd put reinforcing up and bolt the reinforcing up into the roof. Or if it was worse than that, they'd put slabs across and they'd put props up either end to hold the roof up. But that was only in bad roof conditions. They also had a bloke who was a safety officer in charge of the men in that section, and he was called in deputy. And he was responsible for telling the blokes how to operate the machine safely, making sure that he overseen the situation so no one got injured. And he also carried a lamp on his side. And this lamp, if because there was gases down the mine, if he held this lamp up in a high gas area, the lamp would go out. So he'd get his men out of there. They now have gas detectors and all that sort of stuff. And the lamps they have on the back of those miners' belts now have a digital display area, so they can send down from pit top a digital message to them. They pick it up on the back of their lamp batteries, like a display panel, and how they know they've got a message is their light flashes on and off a couple of times. So they just pull the battery pack around the front, have a look at it, see what the message is, and it might be a safety message saying, you know, the fan stopped, get out of the pit or something like that. So conditions have changed since I was there for the better, thank Christ.
Yeah, it sounds like they've changed for the better, all right. Man, that sounds like a tough way to make a dollar now, for sure. I just had a couple of questions on this. One would be, or just a comment first, it sounds like, talking about that monster machine, it sounds like it would be a really noisy place to work. I would think one might need to wear hearing protection, earplugs or whatever. And you might tell me about the noise level. I bet it would be tremendous. And then tell me, if you will, back to the tank that you wear, about how long a time... like if something happened and you needed to start using that tank that you wear on your back, about how long would that give you to get out of the mine if you needed to get out before you would run out of oxygen? And then also it sounds like you could sure get yourself in trouble down there pretty quick. I don't know if that sounds like a place. I guess back in those days that you had... a good eyesight back then?
Not really, Don. I was diagnosed with RP at 18. So when I went into my apprenticeship, virtually within a year or so, I knew I was going to go blind later on. And when I was first diagnosed, I actually had no night vision left. My night vision had actually gone. How I found out about that was I was out with some friends one night when I was 18, And I actually walked into the back of a truck, and they said, they laughed, and they said, can't you see that? And I said, I'm bloody sure I can't. So I went along to an eye specialist, and he said, you've got RP. And he said, you've got no field vision left hardly. He said, your night vision's gone. And he said, I just got my license. So I'd had my driver's license. He said, you should give your driver's license away. And I thought, oh, shit, I've got to get to work, and I've got to do a lot of these other things. And I just started going with the missus then, and I told her about, you know, maybe I'm going to lose my eyesight, and I've got retinitis pigmentosa. And she said, look, she said, we'll face that problem when we come to it. And she said, I think a lot of you. And she said, we've been married 38 years now, but we've been going together about 47 years. You know, we was going together a long time before we was married, actually, and she's still with me, and she still supports me 100%, and it's hard to find a woman like that, Don. The other thing is that battery thing, that the battery, I've been underground 16 hours at a time, because if you're sent down to replace someone, and he doesn't turn up on the next shift, or the bike doesn't turn up on the next shift, you've got to stay down there, so... But the most you could work 16 hours underground. And your battery would last that long. The canister that you had to breathe through in case of a fire, I never ever had to use it, thank Christ. I don't really know. It's probably last for about an hour breathing through those chemicals, but I don't think they'd do your lungs any good. I never ever had to use one. And actually, when the pit closed, I brought one home and had it up in the shed there for years and actually threw it out just recently. The safety lamp I was telling you about, that the deputies or safety officers used to carry around. I've actually got one of those here. The mine closed down, and I was one of the last ones extracting all the gear out of the mine. And I thought one of those would be a good memento to keep. I mean, if I'd have been caught, I'd have been probably summoned to find or something like that. But I thought, you know, all of these are going to go to scrap. I've worked here for 11 years. The mine's closing, and someone's going to come in and take all this stuff away. And I thought, well, I'll keep this thing as a memento, because my father had already gone. He'd left and went somewhere else as a mine deputy. And he was also one of those shot fires. You know how I told you that they'd cut around the outside of this block of coal and then bore into it and then put powder in there and blow it out? Well, he was a shot fire, so he used to actually blow that stuff out. And the funny thing is, you were still down there when they did this, but you had to move over three headings. So when they blew one, you was actually three over from that. And when they blew it out, the bloody ground used to jump, you know, because of the concussion. And I think they got away from that because when they detonated that, they wasn't sure the roofs around would stay up because of the detonation and the impact of the explosion. So there was a hell of a whoop when that went, but the mine deputy and the shot fire was responsible for getting all his men out and over three headings over. So they reckoned by being that far away, you were safe, but it put the wind up, yeah, every time they let this explosion, I can tell you.
Oh, yeah, man, I understand, because you hear from time to time, at least over here, about a coal mine caving in from time to time, and yeah, that can really be bad news. And I can understand what you were saying, especially if you had bad roof supports or whatever, and all that blasting going on, and it seems like things would be shifting around. I'm surprised you're talking about all that. That really, that they don't have more cave-ins than what they do.
Yeah, our mine was. There wasn't many deaths from falls like that, but there was a lot of accidents where blokes lost legs, and that was through carelessness, because they used to have their legs sticking out from the mine transports or doing something that they shouldn't be doing. When you went down the pit bottom, it was very cold down there because of the amount of air which was coming down the shaft and being drawn into the mine, so... It was very cold in that area, and you hopped in transporters, and they took you into the face. If the transporters weren't running, then you had to walk in. And just from pit bottom, there was a drift, which is about a 4-in-1 incline, and you had to hop into the transporter there, and a big haulage right up the top used to pull you up this drift. Well, sometimes the couplings on those transporters used to let go, and this bloody thing used to race down the hill at 100 miles an hour, and they actually had down the bottom, it used to, they had an impact area where the rails used to go straight ahead, and if something like that happened, they used to go straight into a blind end and crash. But the main part when the skips are lowered down used to go off at a right angle, so if everything went to plan, they had points down the bottom, and the skips, which were full of coal, used to go off at a different angle. But this was just a safety mechanism, I guess. If something let go, it was going to crash into this blind end, and that actually did happen a couple of times. Thankfully, there was no guys riding up at the time. They were just skips coming down, which were full of coal, and they, for some reason or another, the couplings let go, and they just bloody took off. And thank Christ there was no one down the bottom, because it would have just smashed into smithereens. But there was a very dangerous situation there. The mines in under Lake Macquarie, which is a huge big lake not far from us here, actually, they're very wet mines, so the water seeps down through the layers of stone, mud and all that sort of stuff, and they're working in gumboots all the time. Luckily, where we were, it was a very dry mine because there was no water above it. And thankfully for that, so wherever we went, it was actually dry. It was good.
Yeah, better than working in the water. That's for sure. And, yeah, man, that would be scary when that car gets loose like that transport cart, and rolls back. Man, what a deal. That would be wild, man. That would get the old adrenaline going a little bit, wouldn't it? We took a trip up into the mountains here a few years ago, and I'd seen they have the same things, especially going down some of these long mountain road grades. I guess for trucks, you know, that would have a brake problem or you know, a car, if you were pulling a trailer, whatever you were doing, if you were going down this long mountain road grade and had a problem, they had these same thing, these truck lanes that would go, it would, you know, usually on a curve somewhere, and it would go straight and uphill. And the idea, of course, was to be able to get whatever vehicle, if you had a problem, would be to get on the other truck lane road to be able to get stopped.
I'll tell you something about there was water down there for spraying for dust suppression. But there was no water underground for drinking, so if you wanted to take water to drink, you had to take your water bottle down with you. I mean, I guess if things come to the worst, you could drink this water, but it come out of a dam and you wouldn't know what sort of pollution or anything was in it as far as drinking purposes goes. And the other thing back then, there was no toilets underground. I mean, if you wanted to go to the toilet, you had to go into the return and do your stuff in there and then come back out of the return. Now I think they've got port-a-loos and all that sort of stuff there, so conditions have changed. And the deputies actually were responsible for going into these returns and making sure that there were no mine subsidence there, so the air could get back out of the return away from where they were working. So they had to do a lot of inspections there and walk many, many miles. And they always had their safety lamps with them in case they got into a situation where there was a lot of gases underground and this light went out. Also, in some of the sections, they used to bore holes into the pillars of coal. That's the blocks of coal that were left to hold the roof up. And they used to have vacuum pumps in there, so they'd bore holes into it, and they'd have a vacuum pump in there, and there used to be a lot of gases come out. You didn't realise what was happening to your eyes underground at the time, but this stuff was a gas, and it used to affect your eyes and used to send them pink, I guess, bloodshot, and they used to call it pink eye. And you didn't notice that while you were underground, but when you come out into the air and the oxygen outside and the sunlight, your eyes used to turn pink, and you used to have to go down to the first aid guy who was down in the bathroom. That was his job. He used to clean the bathroom. He's the first aid guy. And he used to have to put those drops in your eyes, and reverse the reaction of whatever the gases was that turned your eyes pink. I don't know whether that had some effect on my retinitis pigmentation in those early days. I really don't know. But this gas, although I nicknamed it Pink Eye because your eyes used to go pink.
Yeah, that would have been my next question. I wonder if that did have something to do with your eye condition. It would at least, probably not, but it would at least make you think about that anyway. And, yeah, I'm sure it was, I'm sure at the best of conditions even, it would have been tough coming from out of the mine, especially if you were coming up in the afternoon or so when the sun was still out. I'm sure if you could see good that it would be tough coming up from the dark like that into the bright sunlight. Man, that would take some getting used to.
Yeah, well, that's one of the conditions of retinitis pigmentosa, that you can't adjust very quickly going from dark to light or light to dark. It takes a while. My son, he's 30 now, he's got retinitis pigmentosa too, so he's losing his eyesight as well. And I notice he's, if I'm laying on the floor or something like that, he will look over the top of me and not see me because his field of visions have shrunk in. But that's just part of retinitis pigmentosa. You just got to put up with it and do the best you can, I guess.
Yeah, I know that can run in families for sure. We've done a few minutes here. That would be a good little segment probably to run on Blind Like Me or one of the shows that we have here. And just one more thing I had. When you say that your eyesight back to when you first went to work in the mines, could you see, like, were you legally blind at that time? Maybe like did you have like good partial eyesight or I'm just wondering what was the time span? You said back when you and your wife got together, even that sometime after that point, which you started losing your eyesight. And it sounds like you two have been together a long time. It sounds like something really that was just meant to work out. But I'm just wondering at what point you really noticed when your eyesight was really started to go away.
Well, I was diagnosed at 18. I drove a car till I was 21, and I gave it away then because I had two crashes within probably a couple of days of each other, and it was because I couldn't see the purple coming from either side of me. I had no field of vision left. I was only virtually relying on my central vision, and I never had much of that left, and so I haven't driven a car since I was 21. When I was diagnosed at 18, I was virtually legally blind then, so I haven't been able to see for that many years now. It's not funny, but anyhow, I'm still working, I'm still earning the dollars, and I'm still enjoying life, so I guess that's what it's all about. You've got to pick your ass up off the floor and carry on and do the best you can. I mean, there's a lot of people worse than us. I mean, they're in wheelchairs. I've got a mate in a wheelchair, and he got some sort of virus, and he's got a stainless steel thing down his neck to breathe, and I consider myself a whole lot better than him.
Oh, yeah, I agree, man. There could be a lot worse things. No doubt about that. And, okay, yeah, I would say after the two crashes, that's strange how they both happened, like, really close together like that. But, yeah, I would think it would definitely be time to quit driving. But at least at some point in your life you've had a chance to drive, and that's a plus. I've had an eye problem my whole life, and I've never been able to drive. I've never been able to see that well at any point in my life, but at least you can say that you've had the opportunity to do some of these things. But yeah, that's interesting. It's interesting. We've talked to a lot of people on the shows that have lost, some of them have lost their eyesight over a long period of time, and then some of them have lost it just real quick, just like that. So it just, each thing affects different people in different ways.
I think what made life a lot better for me is when they brought out voice synthesizers on PCs. It just gives the blind person the ability now to not compete, I don't think, on an equal basis with someone that can see, because they can see at a glance what takes us a fair while to grasp using our voice synthesizers and our screen readers. But to communicate to other people, What I found was when you started these groups up, and I didn't realise that these groups are going, until I stumbled across it somewhere or other, and I've got a tremendous amount of enjoyment out of being on these groups and reading other people's comments that posted the list, and also listening to the blind like me people, because there are a hell of a lot of people out there who face controversy early in their life. And it comes through it with flying colours. They've come up against a lot of obstacles and have overcome them. And a lot of other people, I think, can get a lot out of listening to those people talk and how they've achieved things in their lives, and think, like this other guy was on with us last night, this Dan, he's trying to get a job in a hospital. And he had to use a database or something like Word, but It's achievable. All that stuff's achievable. You've just got to listen to what those other people have achieved in life, and that would give you some inspiration to forge ahead. You're never going to achieve anything if you don't attack it. Have a go at it and see what you can come out at the other end. You might come out smelling rage.
Oh, yeah. You got to get in there and give it your best shot. There's no doubt about that. And yeah, that was Phil's intention for Blind Like Me, was to give young people encouragement as far as trying to decide, you know, you're 18, 19, 20 years old, and, you know, you're saying, you know, what in hell am I going to be able to do? And that was one of the original deals, was to give, like I say, give folks encouragement somewhere along the line, and let young people see what other folks are doing and what they've done there in their lifetime. And you never know, Ray. I'm going to see one day we may run this interview right here. You talking about the coal mine and the different things that you've done would should make a good little segment for a show.
Like Me list?
And I have made a lot of new friends on the Blind Like Me list that I'll never forget.
Well, them crazy people on that Blind Like Me list just talk about the silliest thing.
To join the Blind Like Me list, send a blank email to blindlikeme-subscribe@yahoogroups.com. That's blindlikeme-subscribe@yahoogroups.com.
Okay, I love being on the Blind Like Me list because I'm the moderator, and I get to delete people if I want to.
If you enjoy chatting with other blind folks, come join us on the Blind Like Me list. Send a blank email to blindlikeme-subscribe@yahoogroups.com. About the Blind Handyman List, sir?
The thing I like the best about the Blind Handyman List, great place to exchange information and gather ideas on anything to do with being a handyman around the house.
I found out how to fix my garbage disposal on the Handyman List, and it worked.
If you'd like to join the Blind Handyman List, send a blank email to blindhandyman-subscribe@yahoogroups.com. That's blindhandyman-subscribe@yahoogroups.com.
The thing I like about the Blind Handyman List, I'm the moderator, and I can delete you if I want to. So don't get out of line, stay on topic.
That's blindhandyman-subscribe@yahoogroups.com. You are listening to The Blind Handyman, the talk of the blind community. Our email address is blindhandyman@hotmail.com. If you would like to be part of the show, leave us a phone number and we will contact you soon. Now, here's more of today's show with Phil Parr.
Howdy, friends and neighbors. Welcome back to The Blind Handyman Show. yesterday afternoon, I was in my chair taking a nap, and I decided to go to my bedroom and continue said nap.
Yeah.
And I heard this loud squeaking noise, and I thought, I thought the fan in the house is something wrong. So I jumped up and went and turned everything off. And, of course, the squeaking noise went away. Then I turned the fan back on, and it was no squeaking. And I turned the compressor back on, and it was really hollering loud, like we were about to lose bearings. Scared me bad, because you don't know if it's, the, you know, there's a compressor that runs, and then there's also a fan above that that draws air across the compressor and cools it. So if it's the fan upstairs, it's, you know, $100 for the motor. And get somebody to put it in or put it in yourself. If it's a compressor, we're talking thousands.
Yeah, big bucks.
So I didn't know which one it was, so I called my friends at Action Service Center. And every once in a while, it would squeak a while, and then it would quit. Then it would squeak a while, and it would quit. I went around on the front porch, and, God, you could hear it clear around there in the swing. Squeak a while, and it would quit. And by the time the guy got here,
it
had completely quit.
And that's how it works.
Made another noise.
That's how it always goes.
But, I mean, what caused that?
Yeah,
did you pay the $65.50 service fee, or did?
No, but I promised him if I buy a compressor, I'll buy it from you, big boy.
Okay, well, that was good. It's not our little same little guy.
No, it's not the guy anymore. It's not the same guy anymore.
It's not Patel.
It's not Patel. Yeah. These are Spanish guys, Mexican guys.
I think they actually were the ones who installed my heating unit over there on
the
island.
They were the guys that were dragging your old unit along the carpet upstairs.
Yeah, right.
Those guys.
Those same guys.
That thought crossed my mind.
Yeah.
But this guy came out and he told me, he said, well, he's not making any noise, now is he? No, you know, and even a child of four could hear that.
Was this a joke, man? What are you doing?
You're calling me out here in this joke, man.
Yeah.
No, he was a real nice guy. I like him. He's been out here before. They came earlier this summer and serviced this air conditioner. Obviously, the one in the studio building's got a little leak. Once a year, you got to put Freon in. And they could put some dye in there and find that leak, but they don't want to.
This has had that leak ever since you've had it installed.
Yeah,
didn't you?
It has.
Did you not drive a nail in it?
No, that was me and Joe drove
the
nail in.
That was the thermostat wire.
I drove the nail through the thermostat wire.
Is that the same day he nailed his finger?
No, that was a different day. Sean and I were building we were putting up a big shelf over there. I'd built some workbenches, and we were going to put up a shelf over the thing, and we got the level out. We got it all lined up. I think he had his nail gun, and I had my nail gun.
Ready, aim.
Going along this board, this strip of board, and boy, of all places to hit a nail.
I mean, just drove one through the cable that goes to the thermostat. What are the chances of doing that?
Yeah, not very good.
And the guy was real nice about it, I think. And he came out and... Yeah, I'd forgotten about that. That was many years ago. But anyway, the big air conditioner squeak, and it's been running all day long. It ran last night, most of the night, as they do in Texas. No squeak, no nothing.
Trust me. Trust me, that will come back.
That will come back to haunt me, will it?
Unless you just had a piece of trash, but the squeaking's what scares me, because a lot of those bearings you're not supposed to have to.
No, this was a bearing squeak. This
wasn't
trash.
They're closed.
There comes a time, and I need to call somebody that's real air conditioner guys. There comes a time when you can replace your old unit and you can save enough in electricity, electrical cost, to pay for your new unit. And I've had this one 14 years, and so I'm thinking maybe.
It's probably time.
The one in the house, surely they've improved the technology in the last 14 years.
Oh, yeah.
I think ours is, what they would call builder's grade or contract grade.
It's not the best one.
It's not the best one they make. There's still, I think, some thought about on the most expensive, the highest ER or EER, whatever, energy rating, is still not cost effective.
That's what I've heard.
Yeah,
takes too long.
I think you could get
money.
A little better. Mine is fairly good. I don't know what the energy thing is, but they make one in between the high and probably what I have that would probably save you money.
Well, I think mine is the middle one, but the most expensive system is a deal that goes down in the ground. you know, 30 yeah. feet and then comes back up because it's always cool. In other words, it runs chilled water or whatever they run Freon or whatever they call it now down through that cold ground.
Goodness.
And cools it. I mean, that's one system a guy told me about, but my God, it was tragically expensive.
You know, we have the heat pump, and I would almost suggest that to you. It seems to be fairly efficient.
Well, I've been thinking about it. My house didn't have enough air conditioning in it to begin with, but it really, there's just no way. But I'll tell you what, the loft, she may not admit this or not, but my deal with the loft, we put those new lights up and got rid of those can lights in the ceiling, is it 2 or 3 degrees cooler.
I'll bet.
That helped a lot. She may not admit that. I've been telling her that for years. But the other day, Luann actually said, "You mean you think they put too small an air conditioner in this house?" I just went outside. You know, any point anyway. Bless your hearts. Thanks for listening. Thanks for Ray Boyce. We didn't get a hold of Ray. That was a recorded interview, recorded earlier for broadcast.
That's right. The international attempt failed.
We will try it again. Our
first attempt at international. Well, I did Jewel Blanche, who's in New Zealand.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
I did her on Blind Like Me, but... as far as Blind Handyman.
What did they used to sing in Houston years and years ago? The cable is coming, the 1st of July. Maybe we need the cable from here to Australia.
It's coming the 1st of July. I missed it.
Remember that? On Channel 2 back years and years ago when we were kids. Well, you lived in San Antonio. But their little song was, "The cable is coming, the 1st of July, the cable is coming."
No, I missed
that. 1951.
We gotta go. Thank you, Don Patterson, for actually showing up.
Yeah, and, even numbers.
Don Shaw, thank you so much, sir. Appreciate
you.
Glad we fixed your mic. I'm Phil Parris. He said the blind man. Thank you, too, Tom Houston.
Oh, thank you.
I see, said the blind man as he picked up his hammer and saw.
The Blind Handyman is produced by Out of Market Productions, 1604 Southwood Drive, Lufkin, Texas. Phone 936-634-9500.